Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into Latest Edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Berlin. If that was enough, look at this for a lineup. Frank LaBeouf is with us, as is Don Hutchinson and Julien Laurent. We'll kick things off with reports in England that Thomas Tuchel has told Chelsea that he doesn't want Cristiano Ronaldo. He wants a more fluid, attacking front three. But surely he needs goals, Don, doesn't he? And Ronaldo would certainly provide them.
No, I don't think he would suit. I think Thomas Tuchel knows the players that he wants. I think Ronaldo's in a really strange situation where it seems a little bit cruel on what I'm going to say, but I don't think many teams in the Premier League actually want him at 37, 38 in Feb. I think they're trying to build for the future. I think they're trying to build for their styles. He certainly wouldn't fit into Liverpool, wouldn't fit into Man City. I think Jesus going in at Arsenal, you can see what they're trying to do. He's not going to get in Tottenham side ahead of Harry Kane. So I don't think Thomas Tuchel would welcome Ronaldo and welcome, and I say this very, very loosely, the problem, because you have to change your whole way that you've got to play to try and accommodate a man that solely just plays for goals. And that's what he does. He's one of the best that's ever played the game. But as I said, at 37 going into 38, he might guarantee you the numbers, but it's going to change the whole way you're going to play. And I don't think Thomas Tuchel would want that.
No, I get there's an argument for... I mean, let's be honest, Man City, if I'm right, wanted him a year ago. So their manager thought he would somehow manage to squeeze him in and make it work and blah, blah, blah. But I think that's all very well. Thomas Tuchel allegedly been a little bit picky, but at the moment he hasn't got a front line that's going to scare anybody, even with Raheem Sterling. Yeah, it gives him some more options, but he's got inconsistency all across his front five or six. And no Lukaku, obviously. The one thing that this guy has, at least it has consistency. And Thomas Tuchel's need is a new ownership who might be painting a rosy picture at the moment about how, listen, we'll back you and we'll give you time and we'll do this and we'll do that. Listen, trust me, things change. Things change fast in this game, for managers, for players, for clubs. And if they don't get the right balance, if their season is going south fast, what do you think the new ownership will do in the face of, you know, criticism from fans, from a little bit of, you know, anxiety from the stands? They'll cut him loose because that'll protect them. So he has to be careful that, yeah, it's all very well building long term, but you have to get... In a business that needs results, you have to get results. So, look, I get it. Don't bring Ronaldo in, if that's what you want. But you're going to have to bring other people in.
Sure.
Because what you have at the moment is not going to cut the mustard.
Frank, Chelsea need goals. Ronaldo scores goals. Why wouldn't this work?
Exactly. And I completely disagree with what Don explained to us, you know, in a way that last year they got Lukaku in the same position just to score goals and it didn't work. So I think he can agree with the fact that he has a striker who is seeking for goals like Ronaldo is every time, you know, for the past 17 years. So it's going to be a plus. I think maybe what is behind the scene is the experience that Tuchel got with Neymar and maybe Mbappe in Paris Saint-Germain, that it was hard to handle, you know, a big star in the dressing room. That's maybe the reason why he doesn't want Ronaldo. But it cannot be for me that the fact Ronaldo is going to be the focus of the player, because really, it's what Lukaku should have been last season and hasn't been. Yes, of course, you have to find room from others, but not Sterling is here. You will have to wonder what you're going to do with Werner, with Pulisic, and maybe some others. But for me, if you have the possibility and you can afford Ronaldo, that would be a mistake and the big one to not getting in.
Don?
I don't agree. I think if you look where Man United were last season, you look at Ronaldo's goals, yes, he got the goals, but they didn't even win a trophy. They didn't even get top four. So it's what does he bring? Does he bring longevity? Does he bring goals? Yes, of course he does, because that's what he's chasing.
Sorry to cut you off very quickly, but you are saying that if Manchester United didn't get any silverware last season, it's because of Ronaldo or it's because of the rest of the players?
No, I think there's a little bit of both. I think Ronaldo done his job. Certainly, he'd done his job. He scored the goals. But you go back to the game where he was allegedly going to be dropped for the Man City game. He didn't take it very well. He didn't even join up with the squad. I think it was his back, I think he threw an injury in that we all knew wasn't quite true, or allegedly. So there's going to be games where if you're going to sacrifice Ronaldo, how does he take it? If there's a game that Chelsea want to win in a certain style, and they're playing against the Man City or Liverpool, and Thomas Tuchel doesn't want to play Ronaldo in this one particular game or a couple of particular games, his ego is not going to be the ego that wants to be dropped, Frank. So that's why I said loosely is a problem, because he scores the goals, but he doesn't guarantee you what you want from the rest of it. He doesn't provide intensity when he's closing down. He doesn't close down from the front. He doesn't chase back. Yes, he gets goals. I get that if people are shouting at the screen. But I think if you're the top five teams in the Premier League, I think secretly you might be happy that he stays at Man United, because he might be slowing them down a little bit. Yes, it's the players that are not up to his standards, that's for sure. But how long does it take the rest of the players to get up to Ronaldo's standards? As Craig said, Thomas Tuchel might not even be given that time. So I just don't see it working for any of the top fives. I get what he does, but at 37 going into 38, I don't think he fits the modern day team anymore or what you want for success and trophies.
Chelsea, though. Go on, Frank.
No, the thing is, I hear what you say, and it's why I go back to what I think is the real excuse for Tuchel to not getting Ronaldo to Chelsea, is because he doesn't know what his reaction is going to be if he's not picking him up, you know, putting in the first 11, what's going to happen in the dressing room. I think he went through that experience with Neymar, per se, so it can be a problem. But again, I think I think Ronaldo is maybe the only light that they had through the season for Manchester United, because he scored goals and allowed them to hope for something at the end of the season, because that's mostly the rest of their team who didn't do well more than Ronaldo for me.
So, Jules, obviously we know that Chelsea need to fill that Lukaku void. If not Ronaldo, then could it be Robert Lewandowski?
Well, it could be Lewandowski, certainly on the short list. We know the relationship that his agent, Pini Zahavi, has with the club, certainly with the former ownership. And he was pretty quick to give a call to the new ownership as well. So Pini Zahavi, who's been discussing or talking about Lewandowski to other clubs than Barcelona in Europe, certainly amongst the best clubs in Europe, is very much out there. I think the message is quite clear around Robert Lewandowski. Is like he wants to leave Bayern Munich pretty much at all costs. So whoever wants him will have to come and make an offer. And then we'll see, even if Barca is probably his favourite destination, I would think that Chelsea will probably go ahead of PSG in his mind again. But for those three, I think it's wide open. So yeah, I would think, and we discussed it before when we heard of the first contact between Pini Zahavi and Todd Boehly, that Lewandowski was a possibility at Chelsea. And I think he's among the shortlist with Cristiano, with maybe a couple more. But from what we're hearing, certainly I think Tuchel would rather work with Lewandowski than with Cristiano.
It's a no-brainer for Chelsea, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a statement. Yeah, I know he's not in his prime at 28, 29 anymore in terms of his age, but 50 goals, you know, his consistency, we keep talking about this, Chelsea need consistency in that area. They don't need to have three or four players that run through and goal, and you have no idea what's coming at the end of it. You have no idea. Falling over the ball, missed passes, scuff shots. There's too many of them.
Yeah.
They've got too many of the same ilk in that squad. So they need... And I go back to slightly back a bit in terms of Ronaldo. You know, we're looking at Ronaldo, and I suppose in some way Lewandowski, but more so Ronaldo, who don't have the pace anymore to run in behind and exploit that space. But if you watch a lot of Chelsea games, and the way that they play is sometimes a little bit pedestrian, but it's a passing game. Mm-hmm. It's a slow passing game with a lot of side-to-side passing at times. And a lot of the team's defend, maybe not the Liverpools and the Cities, but a lot of teams defend deeper against Chelsea, certainly domestically. And that denies you that space to run in behind anyway. That's when you need somebody who can have good movement or is clinical in the box. So whether it be Ronaldo or whether it be Robert Lewandowski, it needs to be somebody. And I think from Todd Bowley's point of view, he needs to make a statement in that position with his manager, with the fans, if they are going to have a successful season.
Don, would you have the same reservations about Lewandowski as you do Ronaldo?
No, Dan, I think he's different. I mean, Barca are playing a clever game, aren't they? They've got everyone on toast on standby. They've got Rafinha on standby. They know they want Lewandowski.
I'm not sure how clever that game is.
Well, it's a game because they're keeping the likes of Rafinha and they're saying, look, come and join us, but we don't know when because we don't know when we can afford you. But every player at the minute is sort of hanging back. And Lewandowski wants to go to Barca, that's for sure. I'm not even sure he might leave Bayern to come to the Premier League. If staying at Bayern or going to Barca's his chances, and Barca's, they turn it down, they can't afford him, he might even end up staying at Barca. Chelsea.
He wants out, doesn't he, Don? He's burnt his bridges.
I think he's all in for Barca. So it would be very interesting at the end of the day if they said, listen, we can't make it happen. What do you do then?
Well,
Chelsea, it's a no-brainer because you're getting a guy that's proven. You're getting a guy that's ridiculously fit and is willing to do the work when he hasn't got the ball. His attitude's fantastic. So for Chelsea, my word, what a signing that would be.
I think he's super keen in Barca, but I think he's all in for getting out of Bayern.
Yes.
I think that's the way I would look at it. I think he's all in getting a move with a certain amount of gravitas to a big club who's competing and just getting out of a team and a structure who he think have sort of mocked him around, whether we agree with that or not. That Salihamidzic, Oliver Kahn and the rest of them, I think that on the face of it, we've been talking about it for 3 or 4 months, that relationship to me seems pretty irreparable.
Yes. Who would you choose, Lewandowski or Ronaldo, Frank?
Why do you have to ask that question to me? If I could get both of them, you know, that would be great. But I don't know. It's they are very effective, both of them, even if they're getting old. Allow me to not answer to your question because I will be insulting the other.
Frank, don't worry about that.
No, I'm not. I love
you. No, they didn't get on the documentary.
No. No. But I'm not a tabloid, so I have to respect the players. And really, I think as Don said, you know, everybody would love to see Ronaldo staying at Manchester United because he seems to be not willing to stay, so he's going to be a big problem. So Man United will be out of the race. I think Lewandowski is not that stupid in a way that he doesn't have any backup. So Barcelona or nothing? No. I think he has a backup, so I'm sure they're already in discussion with Chelsea. I don't know, you know. I would be pleased if one of them comes, but it has to be one of the two. Sorry, it has to be one of the two because they desperately need a striker.
Well, listen, we can't. Ronaldo's achievements have been there for everybody to see, but the two best ready-made strikers on the planet at the moment, and I say ready-made, I'm not talking about Erling Haaland or any of these, are Karim Benzema and Robert Lewandowski in that position. The two best, in my opinion, on the planet. One's not for sale, and he's literally carried Real Madrid for the last couple of years. And the other one has major problems at his club. So the answer, in my opinion, is a simple Robert Lewandowski. He is still one of, even in his 30s, still one of the most sought-after and talented out-and-out number nines, along with Karim Benzema, that plays this game at the moment.
Jules, what are we hearing about Tuchel's power with the new ownership? Obviously, they seem to be taking his advice, if indeed this is true.
Yeah, no, I think he's very involved. They spend a lot of time on the phone. And certainly on the main signings, I think on all signings, because let's be honest here, Todd Bowley, who is not just the new owner, but has to be a bit of a sporting director because everybody has left pretty much. But he doesn't know anything about, you know, football. If you told him about Rafinha 6 months ago, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't know him that well, but I'm pretty sure he had no idea who Rafinha was. So, of course, he comes from Tuchel, from the recruitment team, to Todd Bowley, who then has to go and close the deals like he did with Raheem Sterling. To be fair, quite well. So it comes down from Tuchel. They spend, again, a lot of time on the phone. They talk a lot. And again, Lewandowski, Cristiano Ronaldo was different because that's Jorge Mendes coming directly to Todd Bowley. And then clearly, Clearly, then he moved to Thomas Tuchel, and Thomas Tuchel said, I'm not so sure. For Lewandowski, who is very much Pini Zahavi is in the house. What can we do with Lewandowski? Are we interested in Lewandowski? I'm pretty sure that Todd Boehly knew who Lewandowski was, unlike Rafinha. But they have to work close together to each other. It's not just Todd Boehly saying, I'm backing you up here this summer. It's very much Thomas Tuchel saying, listen, we need this, we need that position, we need to sell him, we need to buy him, we need to extend him, we need to loan him out, this one, that one, because right now Todd Boehly cannot do that. He needs Thomas Tuchel to give him the orders almost, and for then Todd Boehly and his people around him to make those things happen.
Frank? Dan,
yeah, I think there is another thing that we didn't look at when you asked me for the choice. You know, I think in terms of football, maybe Lewandowski is a better choice, I would say, because as for everything Craig mentioned before and the power that he still has. But in terms of maybe glamour, but everything in terms of market, if you want to be in the first position in the world, you will be when you have Ronaldo. So you have to. You will extend a lot your merchandising power and everything more than if you have Lewandowski. Chelsea always been willing to be in first spot. And look at Manchester United. The only thing they talk about is whether Ronaldo's going to stay or not. They don't care, really, the media, they don't really care about what's going to happen to Manchester United right now. It's what's going on with Ronaldo. If you have Ronaldo in your team, you are in another planet. You're the planet of the top of the top. That's might be a make the difference for Mr. Boehly as well.
Frank, a lot of love towards Lewandowski and Cristiano Ronaldo. Donny didn't show the same sort of love to Raheem Sterling when we discussed his move to Chelsea. Frank has his doubts. Do you?
Yes, I do. Go on, Frank. No, go on. Go on.
No, I think it's one of their moves down where I think everyone wins. I think Chelsea win because they get a good player at the right age, 27. I think Man City receive a really good fee. I think Man City, especially with Pep, I always trust him to get it right. If he's got a player, I go back a few years when Leroy Sané left and I thought, that's a bad move. That's a bad decision letting him go. The balance on the left-hand side, he was brilliant. Look what's happened to Leroy Sané. He's got Jack Grealish here on the left-hand side. He's got Phil Foden. He's got Mahrez. He's got Bernardo Silva. He's got Kevin De Bruyne. So I don't think Pep will lose any sleep. So as I said, I think for all three parties, I think the player gets to move back to London where he first started and where he first sort of came from, if you like. So he gets back to close to his family, plays for a really big football club. He'll be probably thinking he's the main man there, where he certainly wasn't the main man, and no one's the main man at Man City under Pep. It's all about the team. So I think, as I said, for all parties, I think it really fits Raheem Sterling going to Chelsea. I think he'll do well.
Don, I have a question for you. If Raheem Sterling was so good, was so fantastic at Manchester City, why Guardiola wants to get rid of him? If he's still the player that he used to be, like 2 years ago, when he was in, it was absolutely fantastic. Why the last 2 years we felt that Guardiola didn't count on him and was ready to get rid of him? So if he's, and we're going to talk about Ake, I guess, after that, if Chelsea wants to be the top of the top, why do you want player that club don't want anymore? And that's the case for Raheem Sterling. I'm not mistaken, I think. I think Guardiola doesn't want Sterling anymore.
Well, I think that's true. I think there's an element of that being the truth, but still, you can still be a very good player. Just because someone like Guardiola doesn't rate you for Man City, it doesn't mean you're washed up or you're finished. You can still be, as he was at the Euros, England's best player. He can still be an incredible talent. He can still take players on. His attitude is always brilliant. He's better than what Chelsea have got, probably, if they're going to look to move Hakim Ziyech on and one or two others. Hudson-Odoi's nowhere near the first team. So we'd imagine he's going to walk straight into Chelsea's team. And as I said, you know Retire Frank as well. When you've got a move and you've got a new manager and he sells the club to you and you're 27 and you still back yourself as being a player because he is a fantastic player. And Thomas Tuchel sells him the position. He sells him the players that he's going to play with. He sells him what ideas he wants, and he wants him further forward. You must know that he's a talent. He's a brilliant player. Just because Pep doesn't fancy him. As I said, because Pep's done £100 million on Jack Grealish and Phil Foden on the left-hand side. And don't forget, Calvin Phillips is now coming alongside Rodri, so it allows them to play a double pivot. So even might even push Kevin De Bruyne further forward. So the riches that he's got, and that's Alvarez and Haaland in the equation as well at City. So I think it's just one of them moves where you think you get £50 million in for Raheem Sterling, that pays for Haaland. City fans would be buzzing with that.
I don't think it's a case of the manager not fancying him at all. I think it's just a case of the apart from maybe two or three players at City, the other ones are expendable in right. terms of team selection. And I think from the players' perspective, and that's what we've been hearing, there's a frustration that there might be a diminishing opportunity for game time. Clearly, if a guy plays 47 games, whether it's some of them off the bench or not, and contributes 17 goals, makes more appearances last year, you know, I touched on this last week, made more appearances last year in the Champions League than he ever did for Manchester City, he's got a part to play from the manager's perspective. However, competition is fast and furious at Manchester City. And I think there's a classic case here. Now, do I think he'd be better off staying at City in terms of his football career? Yes. But he clearly wants to, one, he's a regular for England, and two, he senses that it's going to be even more difficult, and Chelsea's need is more. He improves Chelsea in those positions. There's no doubt about it. Because even though he's not the most consistent player, he's more consistent than what Chelsea have. He's more direct than what Chelsea have. He gives them, along with Mason Mount, who he's played with for England, so many opportunities to play off a striker, through the middle, wide. And yeah, he can be frustrating sometimes because he does so many sort of sloppy things, but then does something brilliant. Not quite in Mo Salah's range, but you know, that's the kind of player he is. He's sort of hit and a miss. And I just think, from Chelsea's perspective, is an upgrade in what they've got.
Meanwhile, another City player could be heading to Chelsea. Nathan Ake, £50 million, Jules. Blooming heck, City have done well if they get that sort of figure to a player who was playing behind Fernandinho last year.
Yeah, that's right. He was fourth choice as best, maybe even fifth. You're right, when Fernandinho, towards the end, played ahead of him, although he was not fully fit, but certainly Stones, Laporte and Diaz were way ahead of him. And it's even more unbelievable in a way that they are ready to pay that much, considering he was theirs only a few years ago before he went to Bournemouth. Ake went through the academy at Chelsea, and then they clearly didn't count on him back then, so they loaned him and then sold him. And now he's back. They wanted a left-footed centre-back, and this is what he does. Will he start? I still think they're going to go for one better, much bigger centre-back, much bigger name, for sure. We knew how in they were for Mathieu Delirte, for example. This looked like it's not going to happen. And again, it shows that they have struggled a bit this summer to sign the players that they wanted, the right ones. So AK will come in, and that's another body, and that's what you want, and that's what you also need. But surely after that, they need to go and get someone who is better than him, because he's a good Premier League player. He's proven, he's got experience, he's a Dutch international, it's no problem. But he's not Rudiger, he doesn't have that quality, certainly not at the moment. So I think it's a bit lightweight if you only sign Nathan Ake after losing Christensen, Rudiger, and also potentially Azpilicueta.
Frank?
I'm very surprised, I have to say, you know. It's funny that it's like the same story with Lukaku. You want him, he doesn't settle down very well, so you put him on loan, you know, in some Premier League club. Then he goes to Manchester City for a reason that I don't know still, because he wasn't maybe your first choice. But still, he does well for the club as a, let's say, number two in some positions. But he would go back to Chelsea for 50 million. You have the example of Lukaku; it didn't work. You have so many examples of players who wanted to come back, and it never worked. We saw Pogba with Manchester United as well. We're going to see what's going to happen to Pogba in Juventus. But we have so many examples of players going back to their former club and not doing great. So first for Chelsea, I think it could be, something that warned them to not getting him. And again, yes, I agree with Jules. Ake is a good player, but 50 million? Oof. I mean, come on, City, calm down a little bit.
Why don't Chelsea just go for the bingo full house and try and bring back Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne?
Yeah, get them all in.
Exactly.
Go for the full house, yes. Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah. Burnley, LaBeouf, get them all back.
We had them once and now they're back.
Just a reminder, you can keep up to date with all the latest transfer news over on our YouTube channel. Plenty of videos there for you to consume. And don't forget to subscribe. We're almost at 1.5 million.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd's Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC. It feels like it's been a while since there's been drama within the PSG camp. Let's change that rhetoric right now, Jules, with reports that Mbappe is happy for Neymar to leave. Messi, though, not so happy to see his teammate go.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. We've discussed the new role that Kylian Mbappe is having at the club and his importance within the project. We say that him and Neymar remains close. We also say that on the show many times, like Messi and Neymar, like Messi and Mbappe as well. I don't think it's as straightforward as Kylian saying, I don't want him here in that dressing room anymore, and Messi saying, hang on, you can't touch my friend. I don't think it's like that. PSG certainly feel that it would be a good thing for Neymar to be moved on, despite giving him a new huge deal a year ago, for example, because they felt that, especially with the new manager coming in, and the form that Messi and Neymar have been in, and the fact that they're not the players that they used to be, neither of them, and that, again, we've explained it, Christophe Galtier certainly doesn't really believe that they can play wide anymore. So if you play them centrally, they can't play. You can't all have them in the same space. I'm not sure you can play anymore Messi, Neymar and Mbappe together unless you sacrifice Messi or Neymar or Mbappe, I guess, and play them wide. So it's also not just for Neymar's form or Neymar and how much he cost them in terms of wages and all of that, or his value on the market. It's also where do you play him on the pitch? Where do you play Messi? How do you play them, the three? Can you even play them three together anymore? And I think this is more the reflection right now within the club on, like, okay, maybe it's all on Mbappe and Messi, and maybe there's no room for Neymar right now in the starting 11. So then if he's not in the starting 11, why would we keep him? I think this is the whole thinking about maybe this is the time to let him go.
But if Mbappe wanted him to stay, he could play that card, couldn't he, Jules?
I think it would. I think, again, in the meetings, in the discussions that not just Mbappe, especially Mbappe has with the hierarchy, but also, I believe, other players. Yeah, of course, he can say, I think Neymar should stay. I think he's still valuable. I think he can still bring this, this and that. But again, if Christophe Galtier says, hang on a minute, I can't play you all three together. I can play two of you, but not three. If there's one to let go, it would only be Neymar, not Mbappe, not Messi. So this is where, again, we go back to the problem. Can them three play together? And maybe they can. Maybe they're going to have a great season. Maybe Neymar can still play wide and still take on players and dribble past everyone and like he used to 5 years ago. Maybe Messi can do the same. And then Kylian was just scored the goals. I'm very sceptical, and I think there's a lot of people within the club who are also sceptical about this.
But Frank, Mbappe, we know, has more power now. When you look at that dressing room, if he wanted Neymar to stay, he could step up and say something, couldn't he?
Yes, he could make a statement and say, I want Neymar to stay. But I don't believe, again, that Kylian Mbappe has the last word. I think he can maybe say what he thinks. Maybe they ask him what he thinks. I have still doubt that he doesn't want Neymar anymore, that he said it clearly. But if he said it, it doesn't mean that the club will agree to that. I think it's I really agree with what Jules said. You know, they have to make choices, you know, tactically. And I think there may be no room for Neymar to play in the first 11. And it's why maybe they try to make sure that he can leave. But I don't think it's due to Messi to try to keep Neymar in the club, or to Mbappe to get rid of Neymar. I think it's only due to how do you find another club for Neymar, because of the performances that he had and the money he's on. That's the real question. Nobody right now, I think, will be able financially, but also in terms of performances, of getting Neymar in their squad. So I think Neymar is going to stay in Paris Saint-Germain. And if he stays in Paris Saint-Germain, Kylian Mbappé would have no word to say about that.
The only person that should give a stuff about who stays or goes is the new coach.
Right.
The only person. And I get it. Big egos, big personalities, big problems. But at the end of the day, the new guy has to make it work, one way or the other. Whether it's 3-3 or 2 or whatever it is. One drop, you know, change the system, whatever. It's of no consequence whether one player wants another one to go, because dressing rooms don't always get on. It's down to the new guy come in has to coach.
Right.
He has to figure out how he's going to get the balance of the team right. So, and listen, at the end of the day, Kylian Mbappe, whether he's got a voice or not, who cares? He signed a contract. He made a decision to stay at that football club. They made a decision to bring in a new coach and replace Pochettino. So he has to work with that. He has to work within that framework of what the new guy thinks is successful, because what he thinks is going to be successful and be better is going to be different from Thomas Tuchel and Pochettino. So it's just too dangerous to be worried about whether he thinks he should be staying. He thinks he, at the end of the day, when you pay somebody to come in to control and pick and select and train a team, you have to trust those people, and that includes the players.
Well, Gauthier, of course, has come in, Jules, and I suppose from a PSG perspective, at least he's made one big decision. Donnarumma will be his starting goalkeeper. Pochettino kind of ummed and ahed dealing throughout the whole season. This seems to make sense to come in and make that statement early.
Yeah, that's right. I think Pochettino invited problems and issues and pressure on him by not deciding who was one, who was number one, who was number two, rotating Navas and Donnarumma in the league, in the Champions League as well, in the domestic cups, all of that, which wasn't clear. I don't think that was helping either of the goalkeepers, especially Donnarumma, who was coming in, who is a young player compared to Navas, who is much more experienced, much older, who was already well settled within the club, who had a lot of friends already in that dressing room. Very different to Gigio Donnarumma. So that was a mistake from Pochettino again. And it's a mistake, strangely, that he actually never corrected through the season, where it was pretty clear, even before the Real Madrid game at the Bernabeu, that there was an issue with that it created tensions within the squad, within the dressing room. The ones who wanted Donnarumma, the ones who wanted Navas, the ones who were not really sure why Pochettino didn't actually make the call and make the choice. For Galtier, it's pretty simple. Never in his career before at Saint-Etienne, even when he was an assistant of Perrin, for example, or in Marseille, they never had two number ones, for example, which is clearly what Pochettino had. There was always a number one and number two, and the number two never, by the way, took the place of the number one. The number one always stayed through the whole season. So Donnarumma would be number one. Now it's down to Keylor Navas to see what he wants to do, if he wants to stay and be the backup goalkeeper. But maybe he feels like, especially in the World Cup year, that he has more to offer and maybe could look for another club. Personally, I think whether you chose Donnarumma or Navas, I think it was right to choose as early as possible, and now everybody knows and everybody's on the same page and everybody's pulling the same direction. And then again, if Navas is not happy, he can always leave.
Now they're going to win the Champions League, Jules. All is well with the world. Just a reminder, extra time, as always.
Will, exactly.
Well, as always, available over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out. Manchester United are in Thailand as part of their pre-season tour. Rob Dawson is with them, and ESPN's Manchester United reporter sat down with Victor Lindelof to talk about how the players react to all the noise that's around the club at the moment.
When you play at this club, it's always going to be people who thinks and who talks. Of course, we want to play at a high level. We want to perform good. We want to win games. But I think I don't think the players care really. I mean, I think, for example, for me, the pressure I put on myself, and I'm how do you say it in English? I'm the most critical person to myself, so I couldn't really care what other people say, you know. So I think the rest of the guys are the same.
That's kind of what you expect him to say. But surely all the negative energy just around the club over the last few months, it's got to affect you as a player, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. But I also think, I also absolutely believe in what he's saying, because different cultures and different people have a different mentality. And being a Swede, most of the Scandinavian players I played with, if not all of them, are very single-minded and very focused and have a great attitude. And I think, to me, Victor Lindelof seems the same. Now, we can discuss his merits as being a Manchester United centre-half and being a starter, but I do believe that he is the kind of guy, knowing where he comes from and the kind of background that they have, that they are just super focused. However, that's not the case with a lot of the other players at this club. We know there are a lot of players at this football club that have been smarting from the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Harry Maguire sticks out like a sore thumb. He's probably had more than most, whether you agree with that or not. Some of it down to him, some not, but he's had a lot. And I think him and others, Paul Pogba was heavily criticised, and that did not go unnoticed in his camp as well. So I think for certain people, it's not that they don't realise that it's out there, but some people are better at shutting it out than others. But I do think there are a lot of players at Manchester United who have been affected with the outside noise. But I do think, you know, Victor Lindelof's well within his merits to say, no, I just concentrate on my own job because players are different. But I think to sort of generalise against the whole squad and say none of them are affected by it,
yeah,
I would not agree with that.
Don?
No, I think he'll be a professional. I think he'll back himself to try and get into the team first and foremost. I understand what he's saying about the noise. I mean, you're never gonna do an interview and turn around and go, oh yeah, it's really affected us, all the noise, it's eaten away at us. It just probably shows a bit of a weaker mentality. So as a pro, you'd never ever do that sort of interview. You wouldn't. So predominantly Erik ten Hag at Ajax has played a back four. So now Victor Lindelof's thinking, well, I've got Varane and I've got Harry Maguire. If I could displace one of them, I can get in the team, and that's all he'll be focused on. So it's great when new bodies come in, but at the same time, the lads will tell you, when a new body or bodies come in your position, it puts you under a lot more pressure, either A, to try and get into the team, make the squad, or even might even get moved on. So he'll just be focused. He'll be focused on early days of pre-season in their camp. He'll want to train well. He'll want to take information on from the new manager. He'll want to show that he's a good listener. And he'll want to try and fight for his spot. That's all you can do as a pro.
But it continues to be a bit of a circus, Frank. Obviously, the latest, Cristiano Ronaldo not going on this pre-season tour, wanting out of United. Does that affect the camp at all?
Of course it does. And I won't believe Lindelof that he doesn't read or follow anything, because we live in a generation of social networks and you know everything about everything already during our time. I wasn't reading newspapers, but I can tell you he's always a friend, a nice friend of mine, you know, who would have called me and say, oh, you've been criticized yesterday by him. They're always nice people, you know, around me. So that's the thing. And I'm sure he knows everything. So I think it's more a statement. You can say whatever you want, you know, we are focus on what we're going to do and we're going to work hard. Yes, okay. But he has to know, because now I'm on this other side of the camera, let's say, that we don't say that to talk to Lindelof. We are talking to the audience, to our viewer, to explain a little bit what we felt at the time we felt that. And I think it's what the media does. They just explain what's going on. And if it's a mess, it's a mess. And it's been a circus, so you have to say it's a circus. And if you are sensible, or sensitive, sorry about that, you're going to be affected. If you are strong as Craig said, as almost all Scandinavian are, you're not going to be affected. You know, I didn't care what people say. Even when you were, and I was criticized, I think it was a plus for me to react. But it's for some players, it's different. But it's a tough time. You know, they tried to rebuild something, and now you have the Ronaldo story. So everybody, all media talk about it, and we are the first to do so. But we are rightly doing it. But we don't talk about the death of the team and what they're going to do, what they're going to achieve, because it's not the time right now. So it must be tricky for the players right now, I think.
Why haven't they signed anyone, Jules?
It's a good question. They clearly went for some targets, and we've explained before, and maybe strangely in a way, that they only clearly targeted very mostly players who've played before with Erik ten Hag, which is fine because he knows them, but it tells you a lot as well about the recruitment at United. If a new manager comes in and all the players that they want are the ones who worked with him before, which is just, this is not how a big club work. Big club work is you've got target, you've got a short list, but you certainly cannot just sign players who worked with your new manager before, because what happens, by the way, if in 6 months' time he's sacked? So, but they certainly tried for Timber. That was not possible. They're still trying for Lisandro Martinez, which, again, you can try and you can play a bit of a poker game because you want the price to be right and you know Arsenal are in. You're not really sure who is using who. You're not sure exactly what Ajax's position is or what even the player's position is. But certainly, it's been difficult for them. It's been difficult to sign a centre-back. It's been difficult to sign players all around, really. And it's quite crazy that they haven't really signed anyone yet. Even Christian Eriksen, who we thought was on his way, this is still hasn't happened yet. So it's a problem. I don't know if you can blame someone just yet because there's still plenty of time, but they're on tour now. They're on pre-season tour. And I don't think this is maybe the position that they would have liked to be with no reinforcement yet.
I mean, to not get signings in that are literally been handed on a plate to you, you know, to go back to Jules, Christian Eriksen, who, you know, comes back from this horrendous health issue that almost cost him his life and gets an opportunity from his countryman Thomas Frank at Brentford. And then all of a sudden this global juggernaut in Man United comes along when 12 months you thought you might not have been playing again after what he went through. And his wages will not be, unless they're throwing a spanner in the works, I wouldn't imagine so. To not even be able to get this over the line, so the Ten Hag can at least clean this up. These easy ones, these more simplistic, none of them are ever easy, these more simplistic ones should be done and dusted quickly so he knows, the manager, that these ones are done and this squad's starting to take shape. But to not have these sort of free transfers that are going to be squad players, to have them lingering on for days and weeks is just not good.
And also, you've got this Cristiano Ronaldo cloud that continues, obviously, to hang over them, Jules.
Yeah, that's right. And I agree with the boys, the fact that he didn't turn up for pre-season. You can do your pre-season anywhere you want, in the park, down the road. You can go anywhere on pre-season. You can do it anywhere. You can stay at Carrington if you want for pre-season. You don't have to physically be somewhere apart from to showcase your player. There's often a lot of things happening with sponsors, activation, new shirt, new sponsorship deal, all of that. And for that, one of the main reasons why you go is to bring your stars to whatever country you go to for your fans, and again, for all the sponsors, for all those deals, for everything that you're going to do out there. So not having Cristiano Ronaldo with you as Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in the world, if not the biggest, is a shambles. And we go back again of the situation at that club and what's happening at that club. And yeah, of course, you're going to go and play some friendlies and you get ready, and Ten Hag can have double session a day, all of that. But again, you could do that at Carrington or in the park down the road. But you usually go away so you can have Cristiano Ronaldo with a new shirt, with your new sponsor for the shirt. Everybody's happy. You take a lot of photos. You do a lot of content for your social. And they do well, they do great. This is the whole story. This is what you do tour, you pre-season tour. This is what happens for everybody, is the same. And yet they have no new signing apart from young Malacia, but I'm not sure, no offense to him, but that it really counts. And you've got no Cristiano. So this tour might be a great tour, but right now this is not a tour where they want it to be.
And it's just a headache for Ten Hag, Don.
See, I don't think it is, Dan. I was thinking that when Jules was answering the questionnaire. I was thinking there's two sort of sides to this. Jules is spot on with the commercial and the revenue and what Ronaldo brings when they go to Thailand. and the stardom that he brings and the shirt sales and everything else that goes with it, I'm thinking Ten Hag's probably sitting in the training camp thinking, leave him behind then. He doesn't want to join us. If he's going to be negative and he's going to be a negative influence and he's going to have the ears to some young boys and he's going to have ears to Harry Maguire and et cetera, and the lads like Alanga are trying to put a shift in to try and get in the first team, if he's going to be a negative influence towards them younger players, leave him behind. Let him be. He probably doesn't want any part of it. Now, if it is sincere and he has got family problems, and obviously the manager and the staff will know that and they'll totally understand it, but from the manager's point of view, if it's not, leave him.
To keep up to date with all the latest transfer news and where Cristiano Ronaldo might be playing to start the new season, be sure to check out Transfer Talk, which is available over on the website. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A very impressive opening match then from the French. It puts them top of the group. And certainly when it comes to statements, they looked very good. Julien Laurent with us. Jules, considering all the hoo-ha in the build-up and all the problems that the French were having, they didn't seem to have any problems, certainly in the first half today.
No, that's right. It was a fantastic first 45 minutes, really, in the way they played, the movement with the ball, off the ball as well, the finishing. Even if I think they were helped a little bit by how poor the Italian defence was, This is a solid Italian team. Usually, a lot of their players play for Juventus, who have had a really good season. So it was not an easy first game, but the French made that game easy to them. They were really good tactically as well. They were very solid, very focused. And you're right, the fact that at the moment, I don't know how long it will last, but at the moment, things are better within the camp between Corinne Diacre, the head coach, and the squad. The players that in that dressing room, especially the key players like the new captain, who is the old captain, Wendy Renard, for example, there's better harmony, there's just better atmosphere within the camp, which was not the case even at the World Cup in 2019. But certainly in between the World Cup and today, there's been a lot of tensions, a lot of ups and downs, and it seems that for now, all those like old ghosts have gone, and it seems that the new dynamic is very positive for them.
Can they win it all, Jules?
I think they could, for sure. I think they've got enough talent. We saw again today, Gayoro, Diani, Katoto, Cascarino, Renard again. I thought Toletti in midfield was fantastic too. They have real talent. The problem has always been that unity that was missing since Corinne Diacre took over in 2017. The quarterfinals have been the ceilings. They've never gone beyond. So this is certainly the objective. But I think if they get more confidence, and if they go from strength to strength, build that confidence, build that momentum, they would be dangerous for any team. Of course, the Swedes are very strong. England are fantastic. They've got, again, so much talent, and they start really to play as a team now under Wegman. There's a lot of really, really good teams. And we said before, this is one of the most open tournaments that we've ever had. Mm. But I think the French have to be in the conversation because, as we saw in the first 45 minutes, when they're on their game, they are really, really good.
Well, tomorrow sees the start of the second round of group stage matches. And to look ahead to them, let's go to Danielle, Julie and Seb.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Got Danielle and Julie with me here in studio to look ahead to Group A, which we're going to see for the second time on Monday. Very interesting group. I think a lot of folks thought England and Norway would get out of this without too much trouble. And each team won their first game. England 1-0 over Austria. Norway 4-1 against Northern Ireland. Julie, let's start with England. Why weren't they more impressive? Why weren't they more dominant, in your opinion, against Austria?
Yeah, I think that it was an England team that played a very compact, organized Austrian team. Mm-hmm. And I give that Austrian team a lot of credit. They just made it a battle. They made it a 1v1 duel. And they couldn't settle the game, England. And I think it's going to be interesting against Norway because beyond being compact and organized, you have Ada Hegerberg, you have Carolyn Graham Hansen, you have Guro Reiten. You have some really good attacking players that are going to threaten that back line for England, especially that matchup with Reiten and Bronze. Mm-hmm. Lucy Bronze, we know, loves to bomb forward. And you're going to see on the other side of Norway a player on her side that wants to get in as well.
And I'm curious to watch the midfield three of England versus the two central midfielders for Norway. I'm not sure we're going to see the same midfield three from England. I think Serena Wiegmann could mix it up a little bit. But how do they dominate that space? I felt like they were a little unsteady in that first match against Austria, particularly in the second half. So that's an area I'm certainly going to be watching.
Norway were dominant 4-1 over Northern Ireland, but we expected that. There's a gap between those two teams. How good did Norway really look in that first game for you?
It's hard to tell. Mm-hmm. I mean, Northern Ireland's shape, to be fair, was all over the place. They were pulling them apart. And I think, honestly, we know the talent, as I just said, that Norway has up front. I think their big weakness, possible weakness, I will say, in air quotes, is that center back pairing. Because in Mjelde, she's just coming back from injury. She's one of the center backs. And the other center back, Thor's daughter, is known to make a big gaffe, a big mistake. And when you have three on the front line like England has, and pressing them as they can, then that could be a real point of vulnerability.
What about Danielle Ada Hegerberg? This is a player that we've been focused on. She's back with the Norwegian national team. They score 4 goals in the opener, but she doesn't score one of them. So what's the impact that she has?
She was involved, though. And if you look at her movement, you look at the attention that she attracts, it opens up gaps for other players. I certainly think she has the ability to finish, and we will see that in this tournament. But just because she didn't put the ball in the back of the net doesn't mean she's not having a huge impact.
I thought she was super unselfish. Mm-hmm. Playing balls across that she probably could have taken on her own. I think actually they want her to be a little more selfish in this next game.
Probably.
Shoot it yourself, Otto.
The other game, for lack of a better term, Austria and Northern Ireland. We given Northern Ireland like any shot in that one?
Yes. I mean, I will say they responded in that second half mm-hmm. against Norway. They were better. The shape was better. They were more organized. And here's what you know about Northern Ireland. They're going to fight.
Yeah.
Right? And that's going to be a battle between those two teams, and they're both going to stay compact. But I do give them a shot. I think Austria is the better side. But
Austria, huge opportunity for them, right, Danielle?
And I do think that the reality is goal differential could come to play a role in this group. And so you got to look to a bigger goal differential. So if Austria is going to be on the front foot, they've got to stay on that front foot. The goal differential right now that Norway had is 3. You're looking to make it more than that.
So there it is. Group A resumes play tomorrow. Should be a couple fantastic games to get started. Austria against Northern Ireland. Coverage at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. And then the second game of the day, the big one, England against Norway, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. We'll see you over on ESPN2.
Thanks, Seb. Of course, we'll be looking back at both of those games on the next edition of ESPN FC. Plus, we have an interview with Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Just a reminder, tomorrow, Jurgen Klopp will be with us as we'll be looking ahead to the new season for Liverpool. But be sure to stay tuned as Extra Time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Craig Burley with us here in the studio. Don and Frank join us as well. Frank, you were messaging me earlier that you're watching the Pogumentary, the much maligned Pogumentary.
Yes, I watched three episodes of it, and in fact, was very interesting in a way that makes me understand a little bit more this new generation and see how they live their lives. First, as football player, they are not the same football player that we used to be. They live in another planet. I guess they're really rich and they can afford many, many things we couldn't. And the chef, the chauffeur, whatever it could be, the private jets. But it's nice to see them living their own lives and analyzing what they do and how they see themselves. According to what people say to them, you know, the complete myth and legends, and I'm not only talking about Paul, and the guy is simple and when he comes to back to his home, but people around him make him a legend, make him a myth. And when I hear his agent, the regretted Mio Raiola, but also the lawyer and some the family and everything, it's completely different from what I used to see from other players, from myself and everything. But it's nice in our business, in a way that as pundits, it's easier maybe seeing that to analyze when they sometimes make comments or even the performance that they find they played well, where we found they weren't, so they weren't very good. So it's interesting. I thought I would be bored, but I really invite my big friend Craig Burley to watch that.
There you are, Craig.
Well, I can tell you after that answer, we're bored.
Whatever.
It wasn't after a serious answer. I told you he had no friends in LA. You've got to, if you're in LA and you're watching the Pogmentary, you've got no friends.
No, that's not it. Because I got a little bit sick, you know, so I had to stay at home for like
Well, watch Ozarks or something else, you know, watch.
I eat too much. I eat too saucy. I thought the only French people will eat some sauce, but it's like American love it. You know?
You've not been at Del Piero's restaurant, have you?
Yeah. No, because Alessandro is not here. He's in Italy, so I didn't want to go if he's not there.
Yeah, but he still has a restaurant.
Yeah, but I want to see him. He's the food I can find anywhere in the world. The food.
Anyway, I was intrigued by your answer to the Pogmentary question, and I'm actually thinking about.
Yeah, you've got to watch it, Craig, tonight. There you go.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight.
Whenever.
For Craig.
Whenever.
Tonight.
Was any of the meat at Stevie's barbecue last night not well done? Also, how exactly do you barbecue a shepherd's pie?
The answer is. Let me just adjust this. Oh. The answer is. What was the question? Some of the meat was nice and tender.
Yes, lovely.
If there was a couple of bits that were shoveled onto. To Nicol's plate by his good lady.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because he didn't eat anything.
Steve doesn't
anyway.
Eat at parties.
But I think it was being packaged together right. For later that evening.
I see.
Right. And the two burgers that were shoveled onto his plate, I can tell you, you could put them on the menu as incinerated. But no, they were.
And you had a lovely time?
Oh, yeah, it was marvellous.
Oh, that's nice.
And you're playing with the dog, the new puppy.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, a Scottish guy eating, you know, for free, you know?
The big,
yeah, the good time.
And the big puppy, he's a big, but lovely.
What's it, like £90 at the moment? It must be around about that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100. Fun dog. Stevie couldn't get his head around that fact that I was having a summer drink.
Right, yes.
Cider. Of course. Just couldn't get his head around that.
Oh, right.
Very nice.
There you go. And
we didn't have to drive home.
Oh, beautiful. There we are.
And it wasn't Stevie.
Don, what did you do yesterday? We heard from everyone else.
Who, me?
Just chilling, Dan. The weather's boiling here, so just absolutely chilling in the garden. It's amazing.
Lovely.
Any animals, Don? Because the last time we were on, there was a few peeking in your window.
No, it's pretty quiet. All pretty quiet. I'm looking after the twins. There's a little Miller's. What is Miller now? Nearly 3 months. So it's too hot for him.
Wow.
So it's too hot.
Too hot.
That'll soon be time again, Don, I think, to go again. No.
God, people might be eating. Only that. Frank, you joined Strasbourg 10 years after Arsene Wenger retired as a player there. Did the club remember him? What did the French think of him whilst he was a manager in France? Was there any hint or sign of greatness from him even back then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy's a legend. They remember him as a player because he was a substitute, you know, when they won the championship. I think it was in 1979. But he realized he would never be a top player. But he immediately turned into managing, and he was good. And when he was in Monaco, you know, he did a great job. Then went to Japan. But everybody remember him as an Alsatian, as we say in Strasbourg, people from Alsace. And he belongs to them, and he has all the respect from the Strasbourg fan. And he's recognized as one of the best coach in the world, and he makes the city of Strasbourg very proud of that.
Don, what's the percentage chance of Arsenal finishing in the top four?
Ooh, I think they've got a chance. I think they have got a serious chance. I'll keep it simple and I'll say 25% between them, Man U. I think Chelsea might be in a spot of bother in Tottenham. I think they've got a right chance.
But that means that there's two places there, Don.
No, well, the top two's done.
Yes, yep,
that's... and I think there's four teams there chasing the Champions League spot. I think Chelsea might just get there, but I think they've got it on you. I think Arsenal have got a sniff, Dan.
Right.
I think they've got a chance.
But same chance as Manchester United.
Yeah, just. But I've got no confidence in Man United.
What about Tottenham?
But Tottenham, I think are way ahead.
So great. How can they be 25%?
Because we've not kicked the ball yet, and surely Man United have got to strengthen. Surely, as we sit here now, Chelsea have got to strengthen. I sit here now thinking Chelsea are in a spot of bother because they've got no defenders. But surely they can't go into the season with the squad they've got today. And surely, I mean, if Man United go into the squad they've got today, they might not even hit top six, top seven. They'll be in a world of trouble. So surely they've got a bye.
Craig, when the transfer window is open, does the manager open up and tell you that they are in the market for a player who plays in your position, or they leave you to figure out by looking at the players your club is linked with?
Don't know, I didn't have a transfer window.
Oh, no, you didn't, did you? No.
Don't believe so.
Oh.
Anyway. I doubt that would happen.
No, a manager's not going to say...
No, a manager just tries to do business. If he thinks he's going to be better... Who's bringing a player in your position, it's either to back it up or improve it.
Right.
So you've got to figure out which one that is. But I wouldn't imagine there's too much need to discuss that. But no, I was trying to think back actually. I don't know when all this transfer window malarkey came in.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't remember. Even around 2002, 2003 when I finished, I don't think it was there.
Don, since you're clearly the expert on how to force your way out of a club on a consistent basis, did you ever give advice to a teammate about moving away from a club to go to another club?
No, never. Never. I would never, ever, ever. Saying that, I was on a treadmill once with Paolo Di Canio, and Man United came in for him, and he was sort of, you know, West Ham legend, what do you think? And I was going, you've got to go, Paolo. It's Man United, man. You've got to go. And he didn't. He stayed. The question before, Dan, just very quickly.
Yes.
When I was at Everton and Walter Smith was the manager, he got me in his office and he said, just to let you know, I'm signing John Collins and Olivier Decor this week so you can get on your phone to your agent and you can get yourself a move.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you are? And he went, yeah, I'm signing Olivier Decor and John Collins, so you're not going to play. And I went, I'm better than them two. And he went, what? And I went, I'm better than John Collins. I'm better than Olivier Decor. And then he put on a game, Craig and the boys will know, the week before the season starts, the manager I used to back in the day put an 11v11 on at Goodison or wherever. And he put the reserves youngsters against the first team And obviously I was in the reses at the time because I wasn't playing because of John Collins and Olivier Decore. And I spent the whole game kicking John Collins and kicking Olivier Decore, and Ollie kept coming back. John didn't want a single part of it. I think two or three games in, he ended up playing the three of us, and he liked the fact that I was man enough to say, now I'll fight for my position.
Go on.
There you go.
There you are, Don.
I was trying to figure out how Don got on the treadmill with Paulo Di Canio.
The two of them.
How does that work, Don?
No, well, I was recovering from an ACL. So I was on one treadmill and Paulo was on the other.
I didn't know if he went on the front part and you went in the back. I think I'd much rather go in the front part than the back. No?
Just in case, yeah.
I'm steaming off.
Did the guys like going on pre-season tours because they saw it as a vacation, or did they not enjoy all the training?
Well, I can tell you in the golden oldie days of when I was just literally coming out of the apprenticeship into the professional ranks, so 18 years old, but not a first team player. The pre-season trips were effectively a jolly up.
Really?
Yes.
Mm. Where's the most glamorous place that you went?
Not Aberystwyth.
Aberystwyth's a little town in Wales.
And this is how you want to know how things have changed. Chelsea went on a pre-season to Aberystwyth. We stayed in the college or university, whatever it is.
Did you stay in the dorms?
The dorms.
Wow.
We were in the dorms, and it was like the concrete walls and stuff. I mean, it was so basic, but... And then we ran on the dunes at Aberystwyth.
Yeah.
And the boys basically snuck out every night. The senior guys, I was only 18, so I would be like hanging on the coattails of anybody. But yeah, we went to Sweden as well. Scandinavia, I don't know how many countries, but we certainly went to Sweden 1 year just after that. And that wasn't much different. They were wholly unprofessional.
Right.
Back then.
Frank, where was the most glamorous place you went pre-season?
I didn't go to too many pre-season because I was involved with the national team, so I went many tournaments. And I almost missed all the pre-season training at some places. But I remember the first time that I signed for Chelsea, we went in the, you say, in the Cornwall?
Cornwall?
When you have the whales and everything. And I had the time for 15 days to know my teammates better, and it was great because it was a golf course and everybody was very nice. It was nice weather in England for once, so it was very nice, and I enjoyed it. But I remember a tough time when I was playing for Strasbourg because of the coach. We had we went to the what we call the Black Forest, which is between Germany and the east of France, and he had to wake us up at 6:30 in the morning for a jogging for like half an hour, 45 minutes. Then we had a breakfast, and at 10 o'clock we had a physical training session, and then another one at 4 p.m. Oh my God, the guy killed us. I think the first week we barely touched the ball, and we ran 60 miles, I think. And I came back home in Strasbourg, and I called my wife at the time to come back to cook for me, because I was thinking only about drinking, because it was too hot and I was too tired, and every year she had to stay to cook for me because we were all dead. The guy was a tough guy, but we were very good physically, I have to say, after that. So it's not a criticism, it's just a fact.
What about you, Don?
Oh, we've had them all, Dan. I've been in army barracks. Went to Catrick Army Barracks, where you've got to do press-up leap tests, sit-up leap tests. You've got to put all the gear, six people, three either side of a log that weighed a ton, and jog with that for a couple of miles, holding onto it to try and find out who the weakest link is, that sort of thing. But the best one we had was Howard Kendall took us, and I think it was Sheffield United, I think, at the time, or Everton, but I think Sheffield. And he took us to Malaysia, which was absolutely stunning. It was beautiful. But we got to Malaysia, and the only guy that came with us was the physio. Doctor sort of was coming in about sort of 7 days' time. And the physio actually said to Howard Kendall, it's actually too hot for the boys to train. And Howard was like, what? He went, it's too hot. He went, you'll put the players in danger if they train. I recommend they do nothing for 14 days. And we were like, ah, ho, ho,
Oh my goodness.
So we just had the absolute time of our life, absolute jolly for 2 weeks in Malaysia.
Just quickly, the one that sort of springs back is brilliant, and it just tells me a bit like the Aberystwyth thing, but it's the same, it's the same time, the same era at Chelsea. It just reminds me of the anarchy at the time and the characters and the fun. Yeah, it wasn't the multi-billion-dollar game it is now, but I mean, we went to Torre Quebrada in Spain 1 year. Same era, as I said, with the Townsend and Vinnie Jones and all those boys. It was Ian Porterfield that was the manager, and Don Howe was the coach. Don was a great coach, but Ian had lost all the control in the dressing room, really. Right. It was anarchy. And one of the days he said, right, I think I've told you this, I think outside the hotel he said, right, we've decided we're doing a run and all the players must run all the way up this road in Torre Quebrada, Spain, all the way up to this building and shops and there'll be somebody there or whatever. You turn there and you come back. And so Townsend, I believe, and Vinnie Jones ran halfway up, hid behind a bush, right? And then waited for one or two of the quicker ones to come back, let them get ahead, worked out when they would be finished at the bottom, jumped in a taxi, got a taxi back, stopped 200 metres from the hotel around the corner, got out the taxi, threw some water in themselves, and then ran back to the hotel. And the manager was like, great effort, lads, well done, professional. Look at them, how come you're so slow and they've been in a taxi? I mean, it's just like, as 18-year-olds or whatever it was at the time, looking at this going, this is magnificent.
Yeah, I bet.
But you want... I mean, can you imagine teaching youngsters that kind of stuff now? I mean, it's fun.
It would be fun.
And that same trip, Peter Nicholas went to play golf one morning with the boys, and he opened his golf bag, and there was like six or seven broom handles from a brush in there. And he looked, and somebody went, go and have a look at the pool.
And they threw them all in the pool.
And one of the boys had tipped all his golf clubs in the bottom of the pool.
Oh, my God. Those were the days.
Stamford Bridge was falling down. There was no money, but it was fun.
Frank, that's it, isn't it? You're on holiday now.
I am on holidays, you know, for 20 days. But I would be
20 days?
Yeah, 20 days. Can I?
Wow, fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Enjoy it, Frank.
20 days.
Thank you very much.
You were on holiday, Frank, in LA.
Oh, no, because I'm in front of you. You know, when I talk to you, it's work. It's not holiday, so I have to show up.
That's not the way to look at it.
Oh, have a lovely time, Frank. Don, you're still with us, though, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
ESPN FC, then, back with you tomorrow. Be sure to join us. Of course, we are with you every day throughout the summer.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.